Jacob's house will become a fire, and the house of Joseph a flame. But those of the house of Esau are to be as stubble. A burning in them shall consume them. There shall not be a survivor in the house of Esau, as Jehovah has said. That was from the book of Obadiah, chapter 1. I almost said Isaiah. Obadiah, chapter 1, verse 18, from the version of Yours Truly from 2003, Little Children. That's our daily scripture for today. And in our article, The Ark of Urartu, we continue with part 2, chapter 11, paragraph 10. This is all part 2, all ever since the beginning of chapter 7. That was the beginning of part 2. Now we're at chapter 11, part 10. And we have the Ebers Papyrus. If we note that this is the same document, the Ebers Papyrus, upon which was determined the Sothic Rising during the time of Amenhotep the First, who ruled in 1500, and from about 1526 BCE for about 20 years or so. We can be more precise, but that's not necessary for the moment in this study. But we see, if we look at this academic paper here, the Sothic Rise recorded in the Ebers Papyrus in this paper is dated to 1170 BCE, which just shows how vastly different historians date these things. There are historians way outside the conventional dating method, but we're 450 years different from that. 350. 450 would be too much. We're 350 years earlier in our dating of, or so. I think we dated the Ebers Papyrus to 1170. It was recorded perhaps in year 9, but we dated that as perhaps being the date of the first year of Amenhotep. That was the date of the Sothic Rising. Excuse me. I think there's smoke in the air. I've got to run my HEPA filter. This is not good. It's not good to breathe smoke. I can't talk through a respirator. Yeah. All right. Okay. It's going to be a loud background noise, but hopefully I'm close enough to the mic that it's going to be good enough. The Sothic Rise recorded in the Ebers Papyrus, we date that to year 1, the Sothic Rise, but it was recorded as an anniversary in year 9. That's how we interpreted that. It was the anniversary of that event that happened in year 1, because year 1 was very special to the Egyptians. It meant a lot to them. But it's certainly within 9 years, anyway, either way, of our date is compared to the date of the conventional historians who date that, assuming it occurred at Thebes in the south. But if you date it as occurring in the north at Memphis, it's going to be 20 years earlier. But it's still in the 1500s, which is, you're talking, you know, 350 years earlier, or maybe more, than this date. This date is just, it's just someone else, right? The dating of somebody else shows the immense differences between historians as I said. And this Wikipedia article shows the pangbird was a bird that transformed itself from a coon, which was a large fish, a giant fish of mythology. The coon, it's called, and that's part of the name of Kuun Loon, the mountain chain. The word loon, meaning logical order. Where did we date that? Let's see. Where did I look that up? Here it was, yeah. Loon. Loon means, it refers to the Kuun Loon mountains, but it also means by itself. The word loon means logical sequence or coherence. Or the word Kuun, we see, doesn't usually mean a giant fish. It means an elder brother, offspring, or progeny. In this particular Chinese dictionary, which is fascinating because we know we've been talking about these three related offspring, each one the offspring of the next, who were, well, we're going to come to it in our article, in our study today. But by way of a brief preview, Fushi, Shennong, and Huang Di. Those three in succession were father, son, and grandson in our understanding, our new understanding, which is really, really important. Now, if you interpret things completely differently and you don't accept the genealogy that we've introduced into the Chinese history, then you won't come to the same conclusions that we have. You'll come to completely different conclusions about what the shape of the Chinese provinces are and so on. It's all interdependent. And many people simply will accept things in one way or another, but they won't always accept things the way that we do, right? So we don't know how other people are going to interpret the information that we've obtained. It, from our standpoint, looks very telling and very convincing that this is the Silk Road, the route also of the patriarchs on their journey to China, and Heber, the namesake of the Hebrew people, was the Yellow Emperor, who was the great patriarch, the great emperor, because he was the first essential true emperor of China. It seems really hard to believe, it was hard for me to believe, but what are you going to do if you don't have anything? If you don't accept anything, you don't proceed forward, you don't have any way of beginning to understand these things. They just are a bunch of mysteries. And the myths will stand only on their own in that case. And there will be no understanding deeper than the mythology. But we've got the chronology tied into our chronology. And the mythology then comes alive in the context of the chronology of the biblical characters, the characters who lived after the deluge and who were in the line of the patriarch Shem, which is very much seeming to be the most obvious answer to the father of the Chinese people, who that man was, because many things about the Chinese language and the traditions of the Chinese and even the history in the mythology, and in particular the Miao people, show that the biblical patriarchs, the ones who survived the deluge, Noah, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, were the patriarchs of the Chinese people. We've seen that. In the Chinese history alone, we can see that without even going to the Bible. But we've gone to the Bible. Now, let's read the chapter 11, verse or paragraph 10 in the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, which is our day's study for today. There is a way that Gilgamesh lived at the time of Kainan, Shelah, and Heber, with the city that Nimrod built, called Erech, Akkadian Uruk, Sumerian Unug, Arabic, Warke, Greek Orkoi, or Orugea, Latin Orkoi, Erech or Arak in Hebrew transliteration, dated 2700 BCE. Remarkably. Because that's the time we think that Nimrod, around about the time that Nimrod lived, and the time also that Cainan and Shelah and Heber were all living. On finding something better, we are justified in modifying our belief system in order to incorporate better teaching. That's right. That's the other thing. If we propose that these are the facts, Heber was the Yellow Emperor, we don't have to defend it more than by saying, what can you find that's better than that? What do you have that you can prove that's better than that? So, I mean, what's anything better? We'd love to have something better. There just isn't anything better that we know of. So, on finding something better, we are justified in modifying our belief system in order to incorporate better teaching. But we've already found something better when we found the connection between the Bible and the Chinese history. That's already something better, but we're still open to something better. You perhaps have already found something better than this. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. Older history requires a greater amount of proof to prove. The glory of Jehovah is the keeping of some matter secret, and it is not our place to make contention drag on and on. Wickedness provides no relief for the one indulging in it. The sovereign Lord Jehovah is contending by means of fire, the Hebrew word for which is quite literally ash. Flame in Hebrew is as Shalhebeth, the first four consonants of which are the name of Shelah. That's incredible. Flame, those first four consonants in Hebrew, S-H-L-H, is the name Shelah in Hebrew, because vowels were not written down in ancient Hebrew. That's remarkable. That's his name, and it means flame. And Yan means flame in Chinese, as we say above, and Shelah we've identified as Shenong, who the consensus was by the academic world, the flame emperor, Shenong. So we identified Shenong with Shelah, who was also represented by the word meaning flame in Hebrew. It fits perfectly with Yan Di being the flame emperor, who is also identified as Shenong by the majority consensus. Everything fits anyway. I mean, they didn't just come up with it as an arbitrary consensus. There's evidence for this statement that Shenong is the emperor Yan. And so, as we say above, you know, Shila is Yandi, and Shennong is said, by the way, to have invented tea drinking in 2737 BCE, according to the Chinese mythology, which has a historical date. That's incredible. 2737. Now that's actually the year when Shennong, as the Flame Emperor, took power. He invented tea drinking, it says, in the Chinese mythology in that year. But their mythology, like I said, is more of a history than the mythologies that we have. Because it includes dates. Their mythology includes dates. And, you know, this idea, we don't have to be pretending to be sure of things. That's not what we're not interested in misleading people. The people who act like they know things are the people who are the ones to beware of. We don't have to know any of this. This is something that we propose that always is open to further research. And we're not pretending to be these know-it-alls. You know, the only thing that we have to know is that we believe in what we've learned from the scriptures. That's all we have to be sure of. And, you know, these other things are bonus facts that we can learn from our genealogy. They're good things. Perhaps they're true. Perhaps we believe they're true. But one aspect of the truth is it requires preaching. You've got to preach. Doesn't mean you have to go door to door. In fact, that's seemingly a very undesirable thing, a very obnoxious thing to do, going door to door nowadays, because, you know, it's disturbing people unnecessarily because we have the internet. Years ago we didn't have that. So, I mean, to keep on assuming, to modernize certain things and then say that other things like the door-to-door preaching is not to be modernized, well, that wouldn't be the intelligent way to proceed at all. It wouldn't be the forward-thinking way of doing the preaching work at all. So it's not right. And also, you can't reach as many people door to door as you can reach on the internet. I've been against the idea of door to door work. It doesn't sit well with me, because for me, one single interruption of having somebody come to my door can destroy a lot of the work I'm doing, because my work requires isolation. In the songwriting and all the things I was doing for so many years, and even today with the research I'm doing and all the other things I'm doing, I might enjoy talking to people who come to the door. That's not the point. I wouldn't get any work done, and my work would be completely disrupted, and my mood would be compromised. Everything would be worse if I had people knocking on my door. Now, Yan means flame in Chinese, as we say above. Shennong is said to have invented tea drinking in 2737 BCE when the leaves of a bush fell into his just boiled water. Shennong found that the tea had refreshing properties, and when he began tasting other herbs and found that some were poisonous, he also found a tea that served as an antidote. There is said to be more vitamin C in one cup of green tea than one orange, and vitamin B in it than any other plant. Shennong is called the Emperor of the Five Grains. From Sima Zen's commentary to the records of the grand historian, or Shi Ji, Shennong is kinsman to the Yellow Emperor and a patriarch of the Chinese. They too, with Fu Shi, having created the Gu Qin, or I guess in Chinese, if that's a Chinese thing, it's probably pronounced Gu Qin. Gu Qin, musical instrument. With that having been said, the contemporary nature of these three generations, Kainan, Shelah, and Eber, or Fushi, Shen Nong, and Huang Di, has been herein demonstrated by the warfare, language, and music of China. Three ways in which the longer life of the early ancestors living after the deluge is verified. From religion. When we can relate the early history of Egypt to astronomy on the firm foundation of the eclipse of Nimrod and the start of the ancient Egyptian solar calendar on July 18, 2774 BCE, Julian, the connection between the deluge, the big fish, and history, the phoenix, is Kunlun, and that concludes our study of the article, the paragraph specifically, chapter 11, paragraph 10, of part 2 of the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express. It's interesting that this musical instrument can also prove the fact that these patriarchs lived at the same time. And we know from our chronology and from the Chinese history exactly when they lived. We know the time period, which gives us proof through the fact that they were all three said to have been inventors of this musical instrument. It proves that they were contemporary. It proves that we've identified them correctly, apparently, because of the dating. I mean, as much as anything else, right? So the warfare, the language and music, but we didn't even mention the dating, of course. But I think the warfare correlates with the dating, because we can prove they must have been around the right time. Well, we identify them according to the chronology, right? Because they lived at the same time in our chronology as their corresponding characters lived in the Chinese history or mythology, as you want to call it, perhaps. But it's not a mythology like any mythology that the Greeks had, because the Greeks never had dates for their mythology. The Romans never had dates for their mythology. There were no dates in mythology until we saw the Chinese, and they had dates. They clearly had a much higher regard for history. And the language, we studied the language and saw that what the meanings of the names were. Heber compared to the axle of the cart, you know, forever. Turning like a circle, being an unbroken symbol of forever, the circle. And Shenong meaning, or Shelah meaning flame. Just as Yan means flame, and Shenong being the flame emperor, that's a language connection that we had. And also, of course, Shenong starts with the same two letters as Shelah does. And Fushi being the hidden emperor, as his name is defined. And, of course, he's the hidden emperor because Kainan was, you know, not really the emperor. He was an honorary emperor who also invented the Chinese language, which is in Japanese called Kanji. It's actually called Hanji in the Chinese language, the written characters of the language specifically is what I'm referring to there. Now, we need to know something if we can go back and find out. Right. What is it? Right, yeah. Fushi was an honorary emperor, also called Fohi. Maybe I'm not pronouncing Fohi correctly, but Fushi is the correct pronunciation for his name. Let me see what I can do here. Where are we? I think it's part one. Yeah. Yeah, you see? Keinen means hidden. Hidden, right there. Because jinn, or gin, is the Arabic word meaning hidden, and Keinen has that as the only consonants of his name. CNN is the same thing as GNN or JNN. When we transliterate, it's equivalent. So we have this amazing correspondence between the hidden emperor, Fuxi, and Keinen in their names. We looked at that before. Let's see what we can find, if we can find the word hidden anymore here. Okay, we'll look up Fuxi. Let's look up Fu. I'm sure we talked about the meaning of the word Fuxi. Fuxi? Let me search for the full name. Well, we have his name somewhere. Okay, let's look at his name in the actual, it's right here. There it is. And we'll just take a look at the first part of his name. Fu. Yeah, we're not going to find it this way. We're not going to find it this way, unfortunately. We've got a few minutes. Let me turn off that fan. It's rather distracting. So, yeah, I might add, I mean, I can never share my knowledge because every day I'm learning at a great rate, and I could never possibly share all of what I'm learning. Because if I tried to, I wouldn't have enough time to keep on doing research and gaining knowledge. And I learn anyway, I suppose, even if I don't. I have so much information now accumulated, and I've learned so much already that I can learn without studying, probably. I will learn without studying because I'm processing information all the time. But the studying is really important for continuing to learn. You know, it really helps a lot. And I could never share it all, like, because that would stop my, that would change my learning, right? I'd become more like my students and less like myself, and that's not a good thing. That's why the teaching sessions have to be restricted, and they are restricted to 33 minutes for that reason. Now, Fuxi, I should say, what does it mean? Fuxi, I'm trying to remember what it means. Let's see if we can look him up. Let's see if we can find him. More important, not just look him up. What does it mean? Like, what does his name mean? Wait, oh, that's different there. Look at that there. Yeah, that's a different meaning, is it? Let's see. No, it's the same. Just checking. I know we said he was the hidden emperor. It means something like that. I'm just trying to remember what the specifics were in Chinese. Oh, let's search for the word hidden. I know. It was not the word hidden, actually. In our article, we used the word hid. I used the word hid, not hidden. When I shut that off, see, I'm already coughing again. Fuxi is the hidden emperor. Yeah, I wrote it right there. That's from Wikipedia. This one here. Let's see if we can find that. MDG. Oh, they relinked it. That's good. Oh, is that Fushi? It is. Right. Okay. So what if we just take... This is from mdbg.net. And what does that mean? Let's see if that... Foo? To hide. Yes, to hide in ambush or to conceal oneself, to lie low. It's one of the meanings of the word foo. Found it. Okay, yeah. So you see, kainan means hid, hidden, in the Arabic. And we also see that, and that's, of course, Hebrew is originally Old Arabic. That was the source of the Hebrew language. According to Charles Forster, who wrote the books about the Sinaitic inscriptions, we've seen that in the article. We're almost out of time right now for today. But we saw that in the article, The Wild Road, Ahead to History. Wild Road Ahead to History, the acronym for which spells Roth, W-R-A-T-H. That article, which we can call Roth for short, but it was The Wild Road Ahead to History. And in that article, we studied the Old Arabic in the Sinaitic inscriptions. So the idea that Kainan is from Old Arabic is perfectly fine. Using it, the definition of the word jinn as hidden, derived from the name Kainan, which only has three consonants, C and N, like J and N. And also, the other thing is that this emperor, who was not, this Fushi, who was evidently exactly the same person as Kang Jia. Trying to remember his name. It's not that one. Let's see. Kang Jia. Let's spell it. Let's spell it. Let's redo it. Like that. Kang Jia. Right? And then pronounce it. Oh, it won't let me pronounce it. Okay. That we can go here to our pronunciation dictionary, I think. Where is it? Here they are. Right. Paste it. Pronounce it.
Kang Jie.
Kang Jie. Yeah, that's the character who corresponds in his name also to Kainan. But we call, you know, in the Chinese version, who's also the same person as Fushi. And that's it for today. It's January 9th, 2025 of the Common Era. It's wonderful to study with you. The time is 1949 hours Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star saying bye for now. Thank you for listening and watching. I love you very much.